To be talking about leadership. We're going to be talking about that a little bit in the worship service this morning. There's a couple of things that in particular are very pertinent to what we're going to be talking about that Jesus has covered in recent passages. For instance, he has already enlightened just recently the apostles to this in the regeneration when the Son of Man will sit on his glorious throne. You also shall sit upon 12 thrones, judging the 12 tribes of Israel. In other words, their leadership role doesn't cease in this world, but will continue on into the established eternal kingdom of God. Also, we studied recently the parable of the workers in the vineyard. And the last statement there made by Jesus, that the last will be first, and the first will be last. We are in chapter 21, or actually chapter 20 of the Gospel of Matthew. We're going to be looking at verses 20 through 28 this morning. Then the mother of the sons of Zebedee came to Jesus with her sons, bowing down and making a request of him. And he said to her, "What do you wish?" She said to him, "Command that in your kingdom these two sons of mine will sit, one on your right and one on your left." But Jesus answered, "You do not know what you're asking. Are you able to drink the cup that I'm about to drink?" They said to him, "We are able." He said to them, "My cup you shall drink, but to sit on my right and on my left, this is not mine to give, but it is for those for whom it has been prepared by my Father." And hearing this, the 10 became indignant with the two brothers. But Jesus called them to himself and said, "You know that the rulers of the Gentiles lord it over them, and their great men exercise authority over them. It is not this way among you, but whoever wishes to become great among you shall be your servant. And whoever wishes to be first among you shall be your slave. Just as the Son of Man did not come to be served, but to serve and to give his life a ransom for many." It's always valuable for us to realize that there are four Gospels and the details that are given in the accounts of particular things in the Gospels sometimes are a little bit different. In the book of Mark, what we find is this, we don't have the mother of the sons of Zebedee coming to Jesus, but we have them, James and John, coming to him and asking this question of him. What we need to understand here is that the mother and the sons were all in agreement that they should have some preeminence as far as the role of the apostles go. Now, after all, James and John were two of the first apostles that Jesus had called. So, I mean, they were there before a lot of the other guys joined the band. We also know this, that they were part of what's sometimes called the inner circle of Jesus, which included James and John and Peter always, and sometimes even Andrew, Peter's brother, included in that, where he gave them special privilege. Well, the truth is this, is everyone wants to feel like they're important. Everyone wants to feel like they matter. And we know that these guys, these men had given up a lot to be where they were, to be doing what they did. Very often family, not so many family hours. We know they left their homes, they left their livelihood, and they were living basically off of whatever was donated to Jesus to take care of their needs. We all know that it's part of the human spirit to want to feel like you have some degree of importance. The truth is this, as we understand this, that it doesn't really matter so much what the importance that men place upon you, but what matters more than anything else is the importance that God places upon you. And if you're a believer, you need to understand that God has assigned great importance to you. And there's no way to doubt that. There are many people who love to be in the limelight. There are actually a lot of people who would tell you they hate it, but they actually do love it. We know people like this. It seems as though they really like to have the attention of people placed upon them. Some professions almost seem to demand this kind of thing. If you think about men and women that are actors and actresses, you know, just doing what they do almost gives you the idea that it's almost a necessity for them to like to be the center of the attention of people. We live in a day very often when not the right people are really looked upon as heroes and the people that we need to respect and look up to, but very often you're talking about sports figures sometimes movie stars and things like that. It's funny how little things kind of stick in your head, but I can remember years ago, Jimmy Stewart used to do advertisements on TV for the Boy Scouts. Does anybody remember that? Some of you don't even know who Jimmy Stewart was, but most of you do. But the gist of it was this, is he was on there to speak on behalf of the Boy Scouts, and the way that he would, basically what he said was this, is Boy Scouts are really, really great. I was a Boy Scout, basically, I think he said that. He said, just think, one of these days you might even be in pictures. And I'm thinking, as a kid, I'm thinking, do those two things even line up with each other? You know, what is this great thing about being in pictures? You would have think if you said something differently, that you might be, you know, greatly immersed in mercy ministry or, you know, something like that. But to be in pictures is like, aren't you setting the bar very low? Personally, I don't think that acting really rates very high up as far as importance in the eyes of God goes. Obviously, those people have an opportunity to have a positive impact upon lots of other people than most people do. But let me ask you, how many of those people do you really think are making much of a difference in the lives of other people in a positive way? It's important for a culture to understand who the true leadership is. And it's very rarely is those people who happen to be the most popular. Does anyone know who A.W. Tozer is? Some of you heard of A.W. Tozer, a very well-known evangelist preacher back from the last century. Known to be pretty outspoken and pretty critical at times of things. But he brought to bear some of what we're talking about here upon the leadership in the church and what he saw in the leadership in the church. And he wrote this in 1948. To be specific, the self-sins are self-righteousness, self-pity, self-confidence, self-sufficiency, self-admiration, self-love, and a host of others like them. The grosser manifestation of these sins, egotism, exhibitionism, self-promotion, are strangely tolerated in Christian leaders. They appear in these days to be requisite for popularity in some sections of the church visible. Promoting of self under the guise of promoting Christ is currently so common as to excite little notice. Now, does something like that surprise you? Does it surprise you that was written back in 1948? And if you're familiar with a lot that goes on in the church today, you understand that there's some degree that's going on, obviously, in the church, visible as we speak. As a pastor, you sometimes get very interesting calls. I mean, out of the blue from people you don't know and things like that. Years ago when we listed our phone number in the directory, Lori put it in there as Reverend Keith Staton. So, you know, sometimes people that are looking for a pastor, sometimes they just go through the directory and they look for names and they call. Well, I got a very unusual call just a few weeks ago by a guy named Tony Fox that I had never heard of. He had called and I didn't pick up or whatever, and he left a message, and so I called him back. And at first I said, well, this is Keith Staten, Springs Presbyterian Church. And he's going, oh, you know, he wasn't too sure about what was going on here. But what it was this. Some of you may have heard of a guy named Tony Fox. I never had. But I've been on the internet looking at Tony Fox a little bit since then. This guy was a world-class evangelist. He spent time in Eastern Europe when the Iron Curtain fell down. He was very prominent in mission work in China for a number of years. But when he called me, he was in a place of needing a pastor himself. What he told me was this. He said, you know, Keith, he said, I'd lived the high life as a missionary. He said, people gave me large amounts of money, and you need to understand something. I abused a good bit of it. I loved feeling important. I loved being in the limelight. Then it all fell apart. See, too many people told him too many times about how wonderful and great he was and all of that, and he started to fall, and one of the first things was sexual issues, which led to his first affair, which led to his next affair, which led to more and more and more. And by the time he talked with me, he had lost his wife, he had lost his position, he had lost his importance, he had lost his children, he had lost his livelihood, he had lost virtually everything this world would say has any importance. You see, he'd been a minister for many, many years, and he really didn't even understand the gospel. He had forgotten that the gospel was something that was given to sinners, every sinner. It's something that every sinner needs to hear. He had come to the idea that the church basically was there to serve him and not the other way around. So when Tony Fox fell, he fell a long way. And by the time I talked to him, he was saying things like, you know, I just don't see how in the world God could ever forgive me. I can't believe for a minute that I'm even a believer. That I would do such things as I've done. Well, we didn't talk for that long, but I told him this. I said, you know what? I said, you're in a good place. You're exactly where you need to be. Broken. Totally. Because God has to break us down so he can build us back up. And that's true for every one of us. So pray for Tony Fox that he would find the forgiveness that the gospel promises. See, our fallen nature encourages us to seek positions of greater importance. Things like that might work in the world to some degree, and they really don't even work there. But it's not the way of Jesus. It's not the way of the Church of Jesus Christ. Jesus challenges John and James with the idea, can you drink the cup that I'm about to drink? And we all understand that to mean the cup of God's wrath that will fall upon him as he hangs on the cross. Sadly, they both say that they would be willing, that they're willing to do that, and they don't even know what the cup is at that point, really. We do know this, however. We know that James will be the first apostle martyred, the only one recorded in Scripture. He will give his life for Jesus. We also know that John will suffer very greatly physically in his life, and he will be exiled to the island of Patmos. And we know that he'll die in old age, but in that old age, very much in pain and discomfort and all kinds of things, a lot of which because of things that were inflicted upon him, because he was an apostle of Jesus Christ and he preached the gospel unrelentingly. Serving in the leadership role of apostle cost every one of the apostles very dearly when it comes to worldly things. Leadership is always costly. And if it doesn't cost anything, then it's not leadership worth having. Being a church leader is one of the greatest blessings that most people that have been in that position will tell you they've ever had. To be able to work in that position and see how God works so powerfully in the lives of people sometimes, to witness people coming to know Jesus Christ for the first time in their life. I don't know there could be any greater blessing than to experience that. To see people growing in Christ, to see people reading and studying their Bible and committing their heart and their mind to its teaching. Very great blessings. But let me tell you, church leadership will always bring upon you some of the greatest heartaches you will ever know in life. And that's true for the simple reason that the church is filled with sinners. And you also are one. Church leadership, my friends, is not always a bed of roses. Sometimes you have to have extremely difficult conversations with people that you just don't want to have. Sometimes you have to deal with the ugliness and nastiness of the sins of other people, and you don't want to get your hands dirty in all of that. Sometimes you have to hold people accountable. Sometimes, and all of every time, it means dying to yourself. You understand that becoming Christians means dying to self. But taking up Christian leadership means even more dying to yourself. It means giving up things like time and sleep. I prayed for you at 2:00 in the morning this week. I just want you to know that. It means giving. It means cost. Always. Hearing this, the ten became indignant to the two brothers. And you can imagine doing that. If you and I were there, we would have been just as indignant. Who do you think you are? But Jesus called them to himself and said, "You know that the rulers of the Gentiles lord it over them, and their men exercise authority over them." You know, what we see here is this, is it wasn't James and John who thought everything was about them. It was every one of them who thought that it was all about them. I mean, why were they indignant? It was indignant because they were asking for a privilege that they themselves probably thought they should get. See, that's one of the biggest issues when it comes to leadership and being a Christian, and that is this, is it's not about me. And that is something that's very difficult for sinners to die to, because we are all about self. Self-importance. I mean, you can understand what was going through Peter's head at this time. You need to understand that Peter and Andrew were called to be apostles before James and John. We've seen Peter stand out more as a leader amongst the apostles than anybody else has at this point. He's the first one to speak up, and he speaks very often for the body of the apostles. Went to Quest Diagnostics this week. I do it once every 6 months because I go to see my general practitioner. You know, he checks my cancer thing, markers, or looks for them, you know, and, you know, checks my cholesterol and does stuff like that. And all I said, went there, and I always try to go really early. It opens at 6:30. Of course, it's been a while since I did it, so I was thinking it might be 6. So I was actually there at 6 o'clock, and nobody else was there, and no lights were on and all that. So I left and went to Walmart and came back. And in the meantime, I got back maybe at 20 minutes after 6. There were a couple of cars there of people that had gotten there before me that were waiting to get in. So anyway, 6:30 drew closer. The place hadn't opened up. People start pulling, you know, other people came in, and so people start forming a line at the door, and I was number 3. I would have rather been number 1. But I was sensitive to the fact those other 2 people there were there before I was. I'm standing there, they just open up the door, and people are starting to move in, and it dawns on me, I forgot my doctor's orders in my truck. So I told him, everybody that's there, I'm going to run out to my truck, I got to get this, and I'll be right back. So I was gone for 2 minutes, and in the end, it cost me 30 minutes or maybe 45 minutes. Because when I got in, everybody else had signed in before me. Now, do you think I was indignant? Not outwardly. I mean, I was a very pleasant outwardly. It's no big deal. Don't worry about it. But I'm thinking, you dirtbags. All of you guys, obviously, you look like you're retired. You know, you can hardly walk and your hair's all gray and all that kind of stuff. I got to get to work and you got nothing to do. Don't you hate it when your sinful nature just grabs you by the throat? And we do that. We can be very pleasant on the outside, and then in the inside, we're steaming like all get out. So we know what it means to be indignant at times, every one of us. Next time I'll get there earlier, and I'll have Lori paste my orders to my forehead or something. How many times do you see leadership in essence lording it over those that they lead? I would imagine that more often than not, that's what people are used to seeing in leaders. Those who basically take charge, they're in control, they don't think too much about the opinions of anybody else, and they just kind of forge ahead, and they demand that you follow them every step of the way without any question ever. In saying, doing that, basically what they're saying to you is, I'm the leader and you're not, get used to it and live with it. America today is in sore need of leadership. Not leaders. We got all kinds of people who want to lead, but we don't have the right sort of leadership. We would be blind to believe anything less than that. The reason being, few of them are servant leaders. Few of them are where they are, doing what they're doing, not for their own benefit, but for the benefit of those people they're supposed to be serving. Strangely, however, there is evidence. There was a guy his name is Jim Collins. He wrote a book a few years ago called Good to Great. And in that, he basically proved that servant leadership is even the best leadership in the secular world. That it works and nothing else does. Quite obviously, it's the servant leadership of Jesus that makes the most difference of all. Just remember this. Jesus is the greatest of every good thing you could possibly imagine. He is the far greatest, by leaps and bounds, best leadership that anyone has ever led or participated in the whole history of the world. There's not a leader that comes anywhere close to being the kind of leader that Jesus was. And he still is. Let me ask you something. Did Jesus have maybe even the right to lord it over people? He did. But he didn't do it. See, before he drinks the cup of the wrath of God, the King of Kings and the Lord of Lords will kneel and wash the dirt from the feet of these 12 guys, even Judas. And that puts things in perspective just a little bit now, doesn't it? I mean, why did Jesus do that? One of the things you get is this, is he did it because it needed to be done, and none of these other guys were willing. You have to give credit to Peter because his response was, you know, initially, never shall you wash my feet, Jesus, because he knew it was way below Jesus to be doing something like that. But the fact of the matter that Jesus did it, he's saying to Peter, it's not below me. You're wrong. He also gave them, he did that for a lot of reasons, and one of them was to give them an example. An example that you also should do as I did to you. In other words, be willing to do what needs to be done for the good of others. Lori and I, we went on a short cruise on our 30th wedding anniversary a year ago, last November. And, you know, those things are good because they're cheap. You know, if you look on it, you can get a good, really good deal. You know, when you start comparing all the cost of driving somewhere or flying somewhere, you know, the cruises really are a good deal. And we've been on two or three of them, and it's just a really good place to go to just kind of veg out and just relax because you don't have to do anything you don't want to do, and everything that needs to be done is done for you. But you meet some really interesting people on cruises. And the first night we were there, and we had dinner, you know, at a table with people we didn't know and all of that. And we're talking, and they find out we're from Florida, and they're going, like all of them at this table, they're like, well, you guys must go on cruises all the time. I mean, you're right here. It's like this cruise culture that exists out there. There's people out there that it's like the greatest thing in life is going on cruises, and they go on as many as they can every year. There was a couple there sitting at the table with us. They were going on this cruise with us, the Bahamas, coming back to Miami, and then they were doing it all over again, the same cruise. One we went on just many years ago, but it was another one we went on to the Western Caribbean and went to Cozumel and some places like that. So it was a longer cruise. But, you know, they put you at these tables and there are people there you don't know. And, you know, being Christians, you want to talk with them and maybe have some inroads to things and all of that. But, you know, we were going around the table the first night sharing things with each other, and this one lady speaks to them. She said, I just love to go on cruises because I just love to be served. I like people to serve me, to do all these things for me. Of course, I wanted to throw up on the spot. Because, I mean, it's saying it's all about her. It's all about her. The center of the focus of everything. I'm thinking, how shallow can you possibly get? See, the real joy doesn't come in being served. The real joys and the fulfillments in life come in the act of serving. Do you like the title servant? You might as well get used to it because you happen to be one. If you're a Christian, you're a servant. That's one of those many hats, one of those many titles that you wear. Very often it means doing things that other people are not willing to do. Now, some of you heard something about this. This was several months ago. I had been here doing some work on Friday afternoon and was getting ready to leave, and I hadn't seen anything or heard anything, but I pulled up to the entrance over here, and I noticed that there was three or four cars pulled over on the side of the road on the other side of the entrance to the children's home. So being the curious fellow that I am, I parked the truck, and I walked over there because I suspected that maybe there had been a traffic accident or something like that, and there was. There had been a guy driving in a yellow truck up the hill there, and he must have been going 50 or 60 miles an hour, and the guy behind him said all of a sudden he just veered off into the woods and he hit a tree. So I got over there, and there was probably 8 or 10 people there. And there was one person who had pulled the man out of his truck and was giving him CPR. I mean, the whole shooting match, mouth to mouth and chest compressions and all that other kind of stuff. And everybody else was standing around watching. Do you know who that person was? Some of you know him. And you probably don't think that highly of him. His name is Rocky Walker. I can tell you guys, I was so proud of him. Because in the midst of a crisis, the midst of an emergency, he was willing to do what nobody else was willing to do. I can't think of a better picture of servant leadership. Let me tell you, I really believe this honestly, that the best leaders, the people you want in leadership, are people who don't want to be in leadership. They're not there because they like being in the limelight. They're not there because of all the benefits and whatever they get. They're not there because they think they're that important. They're there because the people want them to be in that position, and that's the only reason they've been encouraged to do it, for the good of everybody else. Now, how many people like that do you know? So are you serving, guys? Just elected two guys to office this morning. And I said that before, and I said it this morning, and that is, we haven't struggled here really for leadership. We've had guys all through the years that when asked have done it. And let me tell you, there's been two fellas that became leadership, became deacons and elders, that probably never should have. And let me tell you the difference. It's those two guys, as I look back on them, they were the ones who wanted to be in leadership. They demanded, in fact, being in leadership. Not true for the rest of them. Get used to being down on your knees. Not just in prayer, but in doing those things that other people don't want to do. heard a story one time about a church. They really wanted to impact their community, and they came up with some kind of novel ways of doing that. One of the things they did was their congregation volunteered to clean all the public restrooms in town and even in the businesses for nothing. Now, if I threw that out to you this morning, would you be willing to be a part of that? What do you think? See, guys, it's all about serving. And one of the big problems with the church, the world today, looking at the church, is they don't see a serving church. They see a church that is closed, in essence, to them in a lot of ways. But very often, a church that does nothing but serve itself. Guys, that's not church. Church is serving. Being a Christian is serving. We should be looking for opportunities to serve. Really. Tripping over each other. When something like that happened, you should have had people who you had to make get out of the way because they wanted to get in there and do something so bad. Serve, guys. God's called every one of us to do it. Every one of us, without exception. It's a big part of who we are. True leaders are servants above everything else.